Welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the spot where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome home, brains. There's only one requirement to hang out on the edge, is that you open your big brain and close your small mind. Did you bring your thinking caps? It's time to put them on, because the conversation starts now.
Welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here we are, back at the spot, the place where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. And today, we got Janice Cummings. We're going to talk about some interesting stuff. First, Brains, let me ask y'all, how many of y'all have been to jail? Raise your hand. I ain't been to jail. I take my hand down. I went, but they didn't keep me. I wasn't booked and I wasn't fingerprinted, so I don't have a record. But you know what? One in three have been in jail. And everybody in the world's family members, somebody have been in jail. Drunk driving, domestic violence, robbery, murder, lies, manipulations, you know, muling, drug trafficking, all kinds of stuff you can go to jail for. You can go to jail for running your mouth, like me. Popping off. But what happens when you go through that process and you try to be reacclimated back into society? The stigma. You can't get a job. You can't get your kids back. You have low self-esteem. Maybe you don't have any skills. Maybe you've been incarcerated from the time that you were a child. Well, you know what? Janine is really working with that population to help them get that hand up and that handout. Also, people that have experienced domestic violence. And I say people because there's some women that is wailing on some men too. Don't think that domestic violence is just a one-way street. It goes both ways. So we're going to talk about that and all the amazing things that she's doing down there in Oklahoma, of all places. I told her she in the okie dokie. So we're going to talk about that and more. Let's welcome her to the edge, Janine or Jeannie. Janice. We're going to call her Jeannie.
That's
we're going to call her Jeannie Cummings. She's here on the edge with us. Thank you so much. Welcome.
Glad to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
I'm excited to talk to you. You know, we got to rapping on the phone and just kind of talking about some different stuff that's going on. You're also a poet too, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
I know you are. So you're going to grace us with some poetry a little later on?
Yeah, a little later on. I'd be delighted to do that.
Yeah, because I want to feel your vibe. You know, it's all about hand claps and finger snaps. Mm-hmm. That's what we do on the edge. But dial us back. Tell us where your story began and how you show up in the world.
Well, my story began actually early on, but at the time I didn't even know that it was being created, because I grew up in a domestic violence household. Mm. And at the time, you know, I was about, well, I began to recognize it. And I actually went to my mom and talked to her about it. But one of the things, because I had gotten tired of living under those circumstances, it started there, but I wasn't aware that that's where it started. Mm-hmm. Until I did the work. I had to do the work and reopen those wounds. So it started there and it kind of escalated through me making bad decisions, because what happens is, even as a child in that environment, you don't really fully develop. So then I began going through social service, teaching, being involved in social movements, social justice, and started with juvenile probation. And I started working with families, and then it just kind of escalated from there and grew.
Well, okay, so this is, again, some generational trauma. Yes. You saw this happening to your mother. Let me ask you a couple of questions. Did you fall into that same chaotic cycle? Did you draw that type of relationship, and were you a victim personally of domestic violence?
Most definitely. Wow. The interesting thing about domestic violence, sometimes people don't even know they're experiencing it because it's so comfortable.
Mm.
Especially when you grew up in it, it's almost like you are attracted to it. So yeah, I made some very, very bad decisions in relationships. And that was part of the journey and was part of where what brought me to where I am today. Yes, of course I did. Of course I did.
So did your mother ever get out of that cycle?
Eventually she did. She's educated. She has a major in early childhood development. So she eventually parted from the abuser, but she still was connected.
Yeah.
In some type of way. But she just wasn't in the household with it.
And if sometimes what happens if you are abused, you become an abuser.
Yes.
Women yes. or men. Mm-hmm. So you get yourself in this entanglement. How'd you get out?
Well, I think what got me out is my determination and the vision that I had for myself. Because everyone, I would suggest that they have a vision for themselves. And when it doesn't feel right, even though you're trying to force it to happen, it's not meant for you. Mm-hmm. So I kept every time that I would, well, when I did get into relationships, it didn't feel right because it was too familiar to what I was trying to get away from. So I would concoct these plans to get out of it. And eventually I would.
I know. Well, I'm going to tell you, I'm a self-disclosed brains because, you know, I ain't too proud. I had a boyfriend that slapped me one time. Baby, I saw like them little Tweety Bird stars. Okay. I said to myself on that day, this is not for me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to tell y'all the whole story because it was pretty intense. But believe and trust that your sister didn't go out like no punk.
No, no.
And it was so different because I never experienced that. I was very, very fortunate that, you know, my mom and my stepdad, you know, they would go at it verbally, but they never went to blows. Mm-hmm. They never went to blows. He never put his hands on her. You know, but there's other kind of violence that people can have. I remember one verbal abuse too. Narcissistic individuals, mm-hmm. people that just are numb to any type of emotion. You got the one that's trying to get over on you. The one that thinks they're super slick. The cheater. There's so many things that can be considered as a violent environment. And your children are watching this. People say, oh, well, the kids don't know. The kids know everything. You don't think they hear the arguing? Again, because I heard the arguing when he cut them leaves off the plant. Heaven forbid he had a, you know, hit her. You know, the police would have been there. They noticed the violence. It's just really a strange cycle. So what do you say to a woman that's there right now that wants to get out but doesn't know what to do?
I would say, start loving yourself.
Mm.
Because when you start loving yourself, you will find out, you will know that you deserve better. Because most of the time, generally, for me, I got into those relationships because I didn't have a good view of who I was. And my price tag was so low because I didn't love who I was.
Right.
So I would say the first step is beginning to remember what you love about yourself. And constantly programming yourself. Seek therapy. That's another way. Get into support groups if you can, because it depends on the situation. Because sometimes the abuser doesn't allow the person to have those type of activities. But things are online now. You can seek and you can find things online. You don't have to leave the house. But I would say get into some groups that build you up and make you feel proud of who you are. That is the first step. Because you can't do anything unless you love yourself.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Self-love is paramount. And you can't love anybody else. You know, but I tell you what, Jeannie, some people don't even know what love is.
They don't.
Because love is layered. It's mm-hmm. textured. Mm-hmm. It has very, very diverse meanings to different people. Some is comfort, some is emotional support, some is sex, some is finance, some is God, some is, you know, it just depends on where that person is at. And I know people that don't know love.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So again, you got to get in, you got to find your spirituality, you got to work with God, you got to work with a women's group, you've got to work with someone that is going to give you some positive neuro-linguistic programming, how you talk to yourself, all of that. And that's what Jeannie does. Mm-hmm. Okay, but you do it on a different level. Girl, you are working with folks that have been incarcerated and in jail. Mm-hmm. And that's a tough population. Because again, not knowing love, not being experienced by love, but along those same lines, they are loved among their comrades there in jail. The gang members are loved by their gang. So it's a different type. Tell me about your experience and how you started working with that population.
Well, actually, I was running from it at first. Wow. Yeah, I didn't really. For me, my journey was really different because I forgot all about the domestic violence. So I was going through life with this big bag, carrying this bag of my past. And when I started working in the shelter, then it came to me, but it hit me hard and it made me ill because I forgot that I grew up in that kind of environment. And I was around it all the time and women were around me all the time. And I began to dislike them. And I got to the point where this is kind of weird how I had this dislike for women, for abused women. And I, after getting sick on the job, I had taken off for a whole year. I went to therapy and I got to the root of what was causing it. And it was my childhood trauma.
Wow. It just showed up a different way.
And it's going to show up. What happens is that you put it under the rug, right? And then the rug gets full. You don't never know when it's going to crop up. And I was blessed to get sick to see it. Because had I not gotten sick, I wouldn't have gotten the intense therapy that I got. And I wouldn't have started to work so hard to get to the root of what was causing my depression, my anxiety, my choice in relationships. All of that is affected. The way I communicated with my children, all of that was affected.
So you get inside the jail.
Yes.
And you looking around, right. And I know you feeling like you on another planet. Like, what is this? What have I gotten myself into?
Right, right.
How did you break into that group? Because I'm telling you, it's a very tight-knit group. They are not trusting, or they got an ulterior motive. How did you get in there and, start working with these individuals for them to trust you?
I didn't do anything for Wow. 3 months, for 3 months, for 3 to 4 months, because you just can't go in. That's their house. I'm Right. a guest. I'm a guest. Okay. I can't go in there being a goody two shoes trying to correct the whole system. That's impossible. Right. That's right. impossible, okay? And guess what? You gonna get thrown out of there in your head. I mean, they gonna throw you straight out of there, right? Okay. So I observed first. I saw who the key players were, okay? And then I began to show respect for the women by calling Miss Jones. Would you ask Miss Johnson to come down? And then they would say to me sometimes, Miss Johnson, why are you calling her that? Because she deserves to be treated like that.
That's right.
What happens when you display compassion to others, it's other people catch on.
Absolutely.
They start mirroring the behavior that they see in you. But I'm telling you what, they're going to try to break you down first. They're going to try to break you down and see if you're going to join the crowd.
Right.
That's where strength in who you are comes in. You have to be strong in who you are.
Because being in that environment is very dehumanizing.
It is.
You're told what to do, how to pee, what time to eat. I mean, there's a chain of command. Oh, believe in there's law and order. Okay, there is a hierarchy.
Oh, yeah.
You better follow the rules. Uh-huh. If you don't follow the rules, you are going to get your noodle busted. You got to pay rent. My brother in jail, he told me, you know what? The whites versus the blacks versus the Mexicans, you got to pay rent. They take your shoes. Uh-huh. And you know what happened? I know I was watching The Orange is the New Black. And I got to meet the actual originator of the show. She is amazing. And she told me her story and how she went to jail and everything that happened to her there. But she also found an awakening. And what I found was so dehumanizing is just, again, basic necessities. So after talking to her, I went out and I know some people, you know, at some Procter & Gamble. I asked them for a bunch of women hygiene products. Wonderful. I pack them up. I send them to the jail. The jail returns them.
They won't
because pay. They want you to pay and purchase the from the vendors that work directly with the institution. Right. They have you work in the institution for $1 a day. There is so much going on with these privatized prisons. You know, it's ridiculous. What has been your experience even getting inside? Because again, to get inside the door is work.
Well, the program that I worked for was originally designed for pregnant mothers because they weren't getting any medical care. So my job was to go in there and link them up with medical care. When they get out, they would get medical care and then they would have a healthier baby. It was set up like that, but it was focused on that, but it had to be tweaked. It had to be tweaked because I had to get the input from the deputies and I had to get it from the women.
Right.
But what happens a lot of times, people are expecting me to give you orders. I don't give you no orders. I let you tell me if you want to see me or not. Mm-hmm. See, that was different. That was different because most of the time they're made to come see you. But when they come in there and they sit up and they don't want to talk, and I say, would you like to go back to your dormitory or your room? And they say, yes. And I let them go. And they'd say, wow, this lady's weird. She's not making any demands on us. She's following us. See, they don't get that respect all the time.
Right. And they are human beings.
Definitely.
So they get out of being incarceration.
Right.
You know, 5, 10, 15, 20 years. Mm-hmm. And they're looking around like you were looking around when you first got there.
Yes.
They're going back to the same environment because that's where mama and them stay.
Yes.
You're still dealing with the same knuckleheads. Mm-hmm. You're weak and vulnerable. You need some money. You need a job. You don't want to go back to jail. How do they begin the process of reintroducing themselves to mainstream society?
I would say there are a lot of programs inside that you can get involved in that when you get outside, you can also continue that relationship. But there's a chance they're not going to do it. They're not going to do it because a lot of times, even if they're on parole, all they have to do is meet with their parole agent and they don't do it. They don't do it. But I think if there were programs that were really designed with their input, the programs that are designed by us, you know, and they need to be.
They're not designed by us.
Not us per se, but people that don't know anything pretty much about recovery or what's needed to build that relationship. Because the relationship is what makes it successful, to be honest. Because they want to show you, they want to prove to you that your belief in them is true.
Right. And they want to be, and they want you to be proud of them. They want that validation. Right. They want that love.
Yes, they do.
They want that love. And you know, something that they have probably never experienced as a child. They've been victimized and brutalized in jail, you know, but there is reentry. I can't think of the word I want to use. But anyway, there's training in these jails now, because a lot of people say that there's nothing going on. Is that because they don't want to participate? But then I know that there's people that have gotten out that's gotten degrees while they were in there.
Participate, because you remember now, all the distractions are removed. So if you're going to do any teaching or any education, that's a prime arena to do it in, because you got their full attention. And there's programs there. They go to programs because they get their time shortened when they go to programs.
Oh, okay.
Even if they're not going for the right reasons, at least they're going. They can get their GED there. They can work on substance abuse issues. We had parenting classes there. I taught infant massage to pregnant moms, even though sometimes the baby didn't stay with them. They had to come back to jail. Yeah, it's available. It's available. But yeah. The challenge is not inside. The challenge is outside.
Hmm. Share that with us.
And I say that because inside you're regulated. Outside you got free open space. There, you know, you can go back and do whatever you want to do. There's nobody to tell you no.
Mm. No boundaries.
Yes, no boundaries. There is a chance for you to do, to reintegrate in, but you got to stop using it's not an excuse because it's valid. Oh, I'm not going to get a job because I got a record. You know what? You don't need it. I mean, you could be something else. You can open your own stuff. You don't, because they are so skilled, girl. They can do so many things, man.
Oh, yeah. They're so innovative.
Right.
My brother, when he went to jail, he told me how they made coffee and they sell and what they did and all that kind of stuff. And I was like, really? He goes, yeah. And the things that you don't know, I found a pottery wheel in his house that he had learned pottery. While he was in jail. I never thought, I never had any idea, and he never shared that. So it's a lot about people that you that you will find. They will pull back the layers. They will pull back the covers. Okay, so talking through a job interview when you have been incarcerated, I've got a couple things. Number one, don't start out with that. Don't lie. Definitely check the box because it's a point and a click. They know if you've had a felony.
They know.
And you don't have to explain all that on the application. Say that you'll speak to that in the interview. Mm-hmm. And when you speak to that, you tell them, yes, I had a felony because of drugs. However, I've paid my debt to society.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have done what I need to do. I'm continuously in programs. And I want to show you that I can be a valuable, independent contributor to this organization, yada yada. What's your thoughts on that, Jeannie?
I totally agree with you, but you have to train them to be able to do that. I mean, you have to give them some direction because when you're in jail or you're in prison, you have to adapt to that culture, whether you want to or not, because that's where you're at. You stick out like a sore thumb. You can have your boundaries. You can stop. You don't have to get involved if there's drugs there or whatever's going on. You don't have to be part of the milieu, but it changes you. And then you got to come back out and you got to reacclimate yourself into the real world. So that's where the programming comes in. If I work with you inside and I take you outside, if you don't try to get rid of me, because what they'll do, they'll drop you too. They'll all of a sudden, you can't find them no more.
Mm. Because they caught back up in that thing.
It's part of the process of connected with the client.
Right, right. And, again, you got to want it. You got to want it. So they get out. And another thing is paroling out. People parole out. And folks don't want someone that has been incarcerated 20 years necessarily coming in, mooching off of them, laying there, watching television or playing video games, not going out looking for a job. And if you don't have an address to parole out to, you ain't getting out.
Yeah. Yeah. And those families can't afford to take care of that person when they get out. Remember now, they probably got their kids.
Yeah.
Or they we're talking about people on fixed incomes. Right. They can't even go see them if they're incarcerated. So the family, it puts a strain on the family too, So it's set up actually, even parole, I know it's probably was intended to be helpful, but sometimes it's a setup too.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean?
And I say setup because if you're in a car with somebody and you don't have the drugs or nothing, and you just happen to be in that car, you're violating parole. You're going back to jail, and then they're going to have to decide whether you stay in jail or whether you go back and do your sentence. But I guess what I'm saying is that it's so easy if you don't follow the rules to be reincarcerated?
Well, let me tell you, I got caught up with some criminals. Okay. And I'm not square as a pool table. Okay. I know what's happening. I got some street savvy. So I work with these really nice guys. I think they're really nice guys down in the mailroom, you know, and they was getting my packages out, getting my customers was happy. No problem. Give me the tracking number. So I said, I'm gonna take y'all to lunch. They say, oh, hey, great, Miss April, we'll drive. I said, okay. You go ahead. I'm a red bottoms. Okay. I didn't want to get them scuffed up. Mm-hmm. So I go and I get in the car, but when I get in the car, I get to looking around. And I see zigzags and little plastic bags and a Crown Royal bag. It's an open condom bag and the seats is all jacked up, you know, kind of a low rider. But I'm not going to judge. I'm not going to judge. They cool. Like I said, I'm from LA. I've been there, done that. I get in the car. I turn to the brother and I said, you know what? Look like you're doing the most up in here. He goes, yeah, I am. He said, I just want to let you know that if the police pull us over, I'm going to tell them that the gun and the drugs in the trunk is yours.
What?
Yeah, I was like, I thought we was going to get tacos. He done flipped on me, and they will do that to you, ladies. Okay, they will roll on you in a minute.
They will. They will. And the lady will do it. The lady will do it to protect them, too.
Oh, yeah. And I was like, now what am I going to tell Mr. Magnificent? Baby, I got to the taco shop and I walked my butt all the way back. Come to find out, they was trafficking drugs and money through the mailroom.
Wow.
Here I am sitting up in the car with him. Okay?
That's what I'm talking about.
So you can get caught up real easy in a situation. Okay? Yeah. You need to pay attention. Know who you're dealing with. You know,
I think that they need to be educated around that, because the women that I work with, I always tell them, now, you know, you got to ask what's in the car and you got to look around to see what's there, because you're going to get busted, because it's going to take them at least 72 hours. You're going to be in jail that time until they prove that you didn't do it. So do you want to do that? So a lot of it is around education, April. That's what I'm saying. Exactly. A lot of times we assume people know things. They don't know stuff.
They don't. People pleasers.
Yes.
You know, they want to do that. I was beside myself. I really was. You know, I didn't know what to do. I definitely didn't want to confront them because they was crazy. They had guns in the car. You know, they was doing some gangster stuff. And I was just as naive. So you can get yourself caught up in a situation like that. But also, what I find disheartening is plea bargains. They always want you to plead out. They always want you to cop. It makes it easy. But there's been some legislation. My friend Van Jones and, you know, Kim Kardashian, they have really, really worked hard to change that, especially low-level drug offenders for marijuana that have gotten these long sentences. First-time offenders. There's a lot that's going on. Folks don't have the money for an attorney.
No, they don't. They don't. They don't.
And they don't get good representation.
A lot of times, too, in my work, I talk to a lot of the attorneys, and which were public defenders. You kind of have to motivate them to do the work, because most of the time I would say something like, aren't you supposed to be doing this? It would be nice if you did this. You have to massage people sometimes to get them to do what it is you want. Some people don't have the patience. I have the patience, because I let the public defender know, this is actually your job.
Really?
This is actually your job. This is actually your job. And I'm watching you. And if you don't do it, then I might have to go a little higher with it. Mm-hmm. Because you're not going to railroad a person that I'm working with that I know has rights, and you're infringing on those rights, you know, and you're judging, especially women are judged extremely hard, maybe because they're mothers, because sometimes I think society looks at these women as prisoners, but they're mothers. They have kids. They have families, you know, they make bad decisions based upon their background and what happened to them prior to when they got involved.
Exactly. Oh, there's so much to do. What can we do as regular old citizens to support your efforts, to support people that are incarcerated? You know, do we, you know, I just don't even know where to begin when it comes to support. I feel so disconnected from that population.
Yeah, well, I think the first thing is just remember that they're there, because they are totally forgotten. Because I'm going to be honest, they weren't on my radar until I started working there. And then I started educating myself around incarceration, specifically with women. But I also work with men around domestic violence. And it's not from the perspective that they're the villain. It's from the perspective that maybe you need to look, try another way. Because whenever you start telling people about they messing up all the time, they're going to put a block up. They don't want to hear what you got to say. They've already heard it from other people. But if you allow them an opportunity for you not to judge them and to just be open with them, then they listen, because you want them to listen.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And a person could be, you know, white collar crime. They go in and come out gangster.
Yeah.
Because they've had to survive.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
You've had to pay your dues. You can't just sit up in there like it's a country club. Okay. I had one of my guests, she got in a similar situation where she was a military officer. Okay. Brilliant woman. Got caught up with some folks with some drugs, went to jail, and Jeannie ended up being in isolation for 2 years.
Whoa, that's a long time.
That's a long time. And you know what she told me? She said they never turned the lights off. That mind control, she said they never turned the lights off. And she came out and someone bought her a camera. And now she is a sought after photographer.
It is.
So you do have to make your own way. You can be a gardener. You can learn how to be a plumber. You can do anything. You can. Well, I don't know if folks want you driving Uber.
There's some things there are going to be some restrictions on, but these women have made whole meals in jail. They have parties for each other in jail.
Wow.
With the commissary items. You talk about creativity, talent. They're brilliant. They just have made the wrong decisions, and they mostly hurt themselves, actually.
They do. Yeah. They do.
And I have a lot of women that take the rap for the guy.
Oh, yeah. Why? I don't know. Because he's fine? I don't know. But there's a loyalty. There's a loyalty. Because he said he loved you.
Yes, yes, yes.
And then he was the king of the swing. You know what I mean? he was putting it down. So you just all caught up in it, or that's your baby daddy. You know, and I've seen some of my friends, unfortunately, go to jail to visit their man, mm-hmm. and his side piece is coming out, you know, and trafficking drugs inside and cell phones and all that mm-hmm. kind of stuff. You're not supposed to do that, ladies. You're not supposed to do that, okay? Because what they're going to do is they're going to have you as an accessory and have mm-hmm. you locked up in there, mm-hmm. okay? That's just our advice. So let's talk a little bit about your poetry. You've taken all of these experiences, mm-hmm. all of this wisdom,
yes,
all of this power, mm-hmm. and you put it on a piece of paper. Mm-hmm. And so... how did you get into poetry?
Well, as a child, when you're growing up and you don't have any power, you know, you have to find things to entertain yourself. And so I know now that I used to do tree gazing. I used to read Nancy Drew books, and I also wrote poetry. When I was outside on my own, spending that time by myself. And through the years, I kept a collection. And then in, I think it was 2018, I wrote this book. and it was called, and it's called Splashes Through Life, because what it reminded me of is that all through our life, we get these flashes of things that happened to us from the past.
Right.
And that's where I got the name from. And at the time, I was still, and the pseudonym was Zena McKean. So it wasn't even in my name. And this is the name of the book, Splashes Through Life.
Oh, wow. Okay. Is that on Amazon?
Yes, it is. It is. Okay. It is. And it's self-published.
All right.
And again, it just chronicles my healing. And it's not all sad. One time I talked about a little girl that I saw at the park playing. It's everything's not sad, because I don't like focus on sad all the time.
Right.
Yeah. Right. It's just discovery.
Well, you know, I'm a poet too. And I discovered poetry as I had a reading challenge. Okay. I couldn't, you know, a little bit dyslexic, and I couldn't, you know, hear sounds phonetically and spelling and all of that. So I started rhyming and putting it together. But then I looked at the world around me, and I started seeing the observations of what was going on. And then I would start writing, and I would feel so much better. And then I would go and do spoken word poetry, and people would, you know, they was with it. They was with it. And they come up to me and they said, oh, I feel that. And the energy. Then I wrote a book. And, you know, I have sold over 20,000 copies of my books out the trunk of my car.
Fantastic.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. So there is a power in poetry. Who's one of your favorite poets?
Well, of course, Maya Angelou. She's one of she's my one of my favorites. And I also like Langston Hughes. I love Langston Hughes. And I have quite a few.
Giovanni, I love her.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm.
But then I look at, you know, The Last Poets. Mm-hmm. They were very revolutionary. They were very cutting edge. They spoke truth to power.
True. You know?
So would you grace us with one of your poems, please?
Yes, I would love to.
Okay.
And the name of this one is called Another Lifetime. I really don't have another lifetime to be who I want to be, to live the way I want to live, to speak what I feel, and to walk tall and firm. I really don't have another lifetime to hide my feelings and bury them deep inside my soul. I really don't have another lifetime to miss any small portion of life. I really don't have another lifetime to laugh at my own jokes and to sing my own song and to write my own lyrics. I only have this one lifetime. So I'm going to live for today. In this lifetime, this is the only one I have.
Oh, that is beautiful. And, you know, a lifetime for some is a matter of hours. For others, it's a matter of years. And for those that are incarcerated, they feel that they've been robbed of those things, that they don't have another opportunity. But if you are still here and you wake up and you're breathing, you are still a part of that lifetime.
Amen.
You know? And so I encourage you to write, to read, to participate in programs.
Yes.
To find out what love is and what that looks like, because it feels good. Okay. It feels good all over.
It so does.
From your head to your toes, that's what love feels like. It's tender. It's kind. It listens. It doesn't hit you. It doesn't mistreat you.
It doesn't.
It don't have a gun and the drugs in the trunk.
You don't got that.
It don't have none of that. So, Jeannie, you have been an amazing guest. Thank you so much again for what you're doing. Because you don't have to do it. I mean, you know, you don't have to do it, but it fills your soul, and I can see that.
Oh, yeah.
You're making incredible strides if it's just one person.
Yes.
You know? Indeed. That's all that it takes. So tell my brains how to get in contact with you, how they can support you in your efforts. You know, me and you going to stay closely connected. When you come back here to California, I got to figure out, because there's Las Colinas Women's Jail here. I don't know what I can do, but I want to do something. I don't want to sit back and not do nothing. So how do they contact you?
Well, my website, to contact me through my website, it's You Win Working With Me. And that's the letter U, winworkingwithme.com. Okay, I'm on Facebook as well, Janice Cummings. And I also have a podcast called Freedom Is Your Birthright. Yeah. Because I do, because one thing that Maya Angelou, I just love when she talks about the caged bird sing. Mm-hmm. So that's where my idea came. Because freedom is free. It's free.
Right.
So, those are some of the ways that you can contact me. Again, and I'm on Facebook, Janice Cummings.
Well, okay. You are doing the absolute most, okay? Thank you so much. Thank you for that beautiful poetry. Thank you for being here on the edge with me and my brains. We love you from the bottom of our socks because our heart just isn't deep enough. You got to put it over so I can get a picture.
Okay, you got it, baby.
Oh, yeah, let me see your pretty face. There you go.
Okay, there I am.
All right, brains, get yourself together, okay? Try to do right. I know it's easy to do right, and it's also easy to do wrong. You got a choice. You got some options. What do you want to do? What are you showing your kids? You know, do you even care anymore? And if you don't, find a reason to. I love you.
Thank you, dear. Bye.